Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If you're not currently affiliated with a community, church, or synagogue and would like to be part of the larger Beth Emmanuel family, you can apply for long-distance membership at BethEmmanuel.org/membership.
For the last several weeks, I have been musing over Psalm 120, the first of the Psalms of Ascent. As far as a Psalm of Ascent goes, this one does not go very high. It's speaking from a pretty low place. That's why it's the first in the series of psalms called Psalms of Ascent. Every ascent begins from a low place, and every low place, then, is an opportunity to ascend. Today we are in a low place. Listen to the words of this psalm. A song of ascents. In my distress I called to the Lord, and he answered me. Deliver me, O Lord, from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given to you, and what more shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? A warrior's sharp arrows, with glowing coals of the broom tree. Woe to me that I sojourn in Meshech, that I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Too long have I had my dwelling among those who hate peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. In the Hebrew, the conclusion of the psalm is even more dramatic. It says, I am peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Why is the psalmist distressed? Because his peace is being robbed from him, stolen away by those agitating for war, lying lips, deceitful tongues. Too long have I had my dwelling among those who hate peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, but woe to those who hate peace. Over the last 2 weeks, we have seen a drama unfolding before our eyes, first in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then nationally. The tragic and brutal death of yet another black man caught up in a confrontation with law enforcement lit a fire that demands justice. As I told you last Sunday, we support the protest, the right of the protesters, and the justice of their cause, as does the UMJC, the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations. It would be appropriate for us as disciples of Yeshua to march alongside the peaceful protesters, as Abraham Joshua Heschel did, alongside Martin Luther King Jr. That is not to say that we condone riots, criminal activity, destruction of property, vandalism, or looting. As I said before, the start of the riots need to be understood with a measure of sympathy as acts of desperation by a community exasperated with a system which does not seem to otherwise acknowledge its grievances. After they started, however, the riots and vandalism took on an evil life of their own. A spirit of chaos has been unleashed. The Proverbs warn us that the beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out. The rioting does not serve the interest of the black community, nor does it advance the cause of justice. Instead, the chaos that has gripped the Twin Cities and the whole nation is likely to only deepen the divide and strengthen the cause of racists and bigots. Yet this is what happens when the social order begins to break down. Our sages say, three things uphold the world: justice, truth, and peace. When justice fails, and truth is subverted, peace also topples. The otherwise peaceful protests erupted into chaos. Is it a coincidence that these things occurred on the appointed time? Can it be a coincidence that the storm broke as the sun set and Shavuot began? I truly believe that our nation and our world are experiencing the birth pangs of the Messiah. That statement is not as sensationalist or scaremongering as it sounds. Our Master Yeshua says that these birth pangs began in his day. The birth pangs of the Messiah in his day involved wars and rumors of wars, famines in various places, earthquakes and natural disasters, signs of a coming judgment. The birth pangs included the fratricidal and violent events of the Jewish revolt, the brutal reprisal from the Roman legions, the destruction of Jerusalem, the burning of the temple, the exile of Israel, the persecution of the disciples. The birth pangs have continued to convulse our world through history, reaching their most devastating, most deadly, and most apocalyptic scale in the First and Second World Wars, the Holocaust, and the dawn of the atomic era. So when I say that we are experiencing the birth pangs of the Messiah, I do not mean to say that this is something new. Instead, the birthing contractions gripping our world today are something that began a long time ago and have been going on for a long time. The troubles and tribulations we are experiencing today do not begin to compare with the scale of disaster that our fathers lived through in the Second World War. Nevertheless, a woman in labor does not remain in labor forever. She must eventually give birth. Our Master said to his disciples, "Do not be alarmed. These are just the beginning of the birth pangs." But a beginning implies that, at some point, there will be an end to the birth pangs. For the last several months, I've been keeping an eye on what one might call signs of the times. If you've been following along with me, I've pointed out that, in addition to an international pandemic, there have been a series of curiously coincidental omens in the world that have correlated with biblical calendar. They are too numerous to recount, but I will mention a few. The signs importance we saw in the lead up to Passover included a river turning red in Canada and wine pouring out of the taps of the city's water supply in Italy just as the coronavirus gripped that region. The signs we have observed include wild animals swarming population centers, as happened in the plagues on Egypt in the days of Moses. There was an epic system of storms that tore up a swath of the United States during Passover, on Easter, in fact. All of these are Passover themes, following in the style of the plagues of Egypt. The signs' importance included the Salt Lake City earthquake, in which the iconic angel atop the Mormon temple dropped his trumpet, followed by the dramatic picture of the steeple on the church in Baltimore that was struck by lightning. The picture of the steeple in flames with the cross tumbling through the air and the clock face frozen on the 11th hour was circulated nationally. These things happened just a few months ago, at the beginning of the pandemic shutdowns. I don't mean to spook you too much, but if you are not following international news, you may not be aware of other troubles brewing. While the United States is distracted with plagues and riots, China is closing down the autonomy of Hong Kong and continues to toy with the U.S. Navy in its attempt to seize full control of the South China Sea. The United States has been arming Taiwan as China encroaches on that strategic interest, and meanwhile, China has moved troops to the border of India, where hostilities were threatening to break out this last week. That puts India, a nuclear power, into border conflict with two other nuclear powers, Pakistan and China, even as the country unlocks from COVID-19 shutdowns. These are dangerous times for India and for everyone. Today, I'm bringing you more signs of the times. Yesterday, June 4, for example, ABC News had pictures from the Arctic Circle, where Russian authorities have declared a state of emergency after a huge fuel tank ruptured and leaked 20,000 tons of diesel fuel into the rivers, turning them blood red. The photographs and video of the spill are startling. They really look like rivers of blood. A week ago, the CDC warned of aggressive cannibal rats in American cities as restaurant closures have starved rats through the loss of their regular supply of dumpster food. And the news has reported numerous similar stories about the animal world encroaching on human territory in reaction to the shutdowns. Are these really signs of the times? Not necessarily. A rationalist can chalk them up to coincidence. But I find that more difficult to do when considering the events of Shavuot last week. I don't believe it's a coincidence that the riots broke out on Shavuot. These things seem to be happening in concert with the holy days. The coronavirus pandemic first became a serious concern in the United States at Purim. The Shabbat after Purim was the last time we had regular services. By Passover, the nation had shut down. Then we started counting the Omer. All through the counting of the Omer, we watched our nation become more and more polarized over the response to the pandemic as people divided on political lines, more and more rhetoric, to the point that the actual facts and concerns of the progress of the disease no longer mattered to either side, neither to the left nor to the right, not to CNN and not to Fox News. But what mattered was scoring points for the political team. Far more contagious than COVID-19 is the climate of vexation and anger, polarization and vitriol over the respective ideologies. It's not a political thing. It's a spiritual thing. A demonic force has been unleashed in this country. Its name is Sinat Hinam, baseless hatred. Baseless hatred is the same evil against which our master campaigned in his generation. It is the same evil of which he warned the Jewish people in his day. His calls for mercy, humility, forbearance, empathy, love for one's neighbor, and love for the stranger went utterly unheeded because, in his day, the Jewish people were deeply divided into the anti-Roman party and the pro-Roman party. The deep divide in the nation created an absolute political gridlock in the Sanhedrin. The Sadducees and Herodians representing the pro-Roman party against the Pharisees and Zealots, the anti-Roman party. There was intrigue, chaos, and political rancor disguised as religious piety. There was police brutality, anti-Roman riots, terrorism, violence in the streets, fratricide, assassinations, and a fomenting insurrection which eventually erupted into first a civil war and then into a war with Rome. Into that divided world, our master came with his message of the kingdom, calling on his brothers and sisters, the Jewish people, to repent and bring the kingdom. He said, "Blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness." He taught the politics of love, of turning the other cheek and going the extra mile for the stranger, of loving not just your brothers and not just those who love you, of returning evil with good. He warned his generation, "Every kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and no city or house divided against itself will stand." Through the 50 days of the Omer, we have watched the divisions in our country only deepen. One would expect that the threat of a serious virus, which has the potential to kill the most vulnerable, would bring the nation together, but instead it inspired more division, more polarization, more distrust, more resentment, more paranoia, more conspiracy theories. Then, on the 46th day of the Omer, just 3 days before Shavuot, came the tragic and brutal death of George Floyd under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer. Remember that Shavuot is the conclusion of the process that begins at Passover. That's why we count the days from Passover to Shavuot. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota, only a mile from Minneapolis. On Shavuot morning, that is, Friday morning, my family could see tall plumes of smoke billowing over the skyline from the fires of businesses burned in the previous night's looting. It was reminiscent of the prophecy from Joel, which Peter recited on the morning of Shavuot in the year of our Master's suffering. Peter said to the crowds gathered in the temple, "What you are seeing and hearing is what the prophet Joel referred to when he said, 'I will pour out my spirit, and I will show wonders in the heavens and on earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes.'" On Shavuot morning, the smoke plumes spanned the horizon. It was a day of blood and fire and columns of smoke. Over the course of the two holy days, the situation in Minneapolis and St. Paul deteriorated until the governor had to deploy the National Guard to take back the streets and restore some semblance of peace. The property damage is significant. Businesses in many neighborhoods were destroyed. Even more ominously, the rioting ignited a fire that quickly spread to other American cities. A spirit of chaos was unleashed, and the nation is still reeling, still staggering. Has this catastrophe brought us closer together? has the common cause of justice or the pursuit of restoring peace united the nation? Just the opposite. Every kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and no city or house divided against itself will stand. Sheboygan Falls, Wisconsin, is about as far away from Hudson as you can get and still be in Wisconsin. It's on the opposite side of the state. One of the things beautiful historic Sheboygan, Wisconsin is famous for is an enormous American flag. It's actually the biggest American flag in the world, the largest free-flying American flag in the country, nearly 10,000 square feet and weighing 340 pounds. The stars on this flag are 3 feet wide, and it flies proudly over the Acuity Insurance Building. A few days ago, on June 2nd, a violent storm system rolled through Wisconsin, knocking out power and tearing the Sheboygan flag asunder. A widely circulated photo from June 2nd depicts the largest free-flying American flag in the world still flying, in the wind, completely torn in two, with most of the center ripped away. Like the photo of the angel atop the Mormon temple who dropped his trumpet during the earthquake. Like the photo of the steeple in Boston struck by lightning. The photo of the torn flag went viral, circulating around the internet and through various news outlets. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, the picture of the Sheboygan flag speaks 1,000 eloquent words about a nation divided. Is the torn flag during the aftermath of the riots just a coincidence? You might think so. But one of my sons sent me an excerpt from a Facebook post made by a Beth Emanuelite who lives in Minneapolis about a flag in a storm that occurred the exact same day. Here's what she wrote. Today, lightning hit the flagpole at the local war memorial near our house. It was so loud, our house shook, and we all jumped. The flag fell to the ground. As people of faith, we believe that not even a sparrow falls to the ground apart from our Father in heaven, and that even the hairs of our head are numbered. If we believe that everything that happens is under God's control, then it's illogical to chalk anything up to so-called coincidence. How much more when such potent and obvious signs occur before our eyes. The storms aren't over. Last night, a powerful lightning storm descended on Washington, D.C. The footage of the lightning is phenomenal. One bolt, brighter and larger than the rest, can be seen striking the Washington Monument. Again, the picture has gone viral, with news agencies around the country picking up the image of this massive bolt of lightning striking this iconic American monument. In that same electrical storm, lightning struck and injured two members of the National Guard who had been deployed to D.C. to help control the streets. A powerful spiritual force divides this nation on the eve of another divisive election. The nation is polarized, red versus blue, right wing versus left wing, conservatives versus progressives, Trump supporters versus Trump haters, so that the threats that should unite us divide us, the call for civil justice that should unite us divides us, and this is the way that it is today. But the thing that disappoints me the most is when disciples of Yeshua get caught up in this partisan nationalism. What are we doing? What does this have to do with the kingdom? Our Master has promised us, my peace I give you, my peace I leave with you, not as the world gives, do I give to you. Yeshua gives peace, but what does the world give us? I believe that the constant information news feed and propaganda stream we are consuming from YouTube, CNN, Facebook, Twitter, Fox, and political talk radio shows and so forth is spiritual poison. It steals joy. It saps hope from the bones. It's bile in the stomach. It injects us with resentment, anger, paranoia, fear, and mistrust. And it causes us to look upon our brothers and our sisters who hold another view than our own with disgust and disdain. Are the politics and social paranoias of this current world really worth that much to us? And what does any of it have to do with the sons and daughters of the kingdom? It's nationalism for the wrong nation. I am proud to be an American, and I am a patriot. I have 2 children in the military. But in the core of my being, this is not my nation. I am a subject of the kingdom of heaven. The politics of this nation are of little interest to me, because I am concerned with the politics of the kingdom. Conspiracy theories are of little interest to me, because I am part of a bigger and deeper conspiracy that is already planning to overthrow the government, not just the government of this country, but of the entire world. I am part of a conspiracy working toward a one-world government called the Kingdom of Heaven. Our hope and our allegiance should not be in the political systems or ideologies of this current world. Our hope and our allegiance should be in the coming kingdom and its values. Our sages say that Jerusalem was destroyed for the sin of Sinat Chinam, that is, baseless hatred. Once baseless hatred is loose in a society, the foundations start to crumble. The world rests on 3 things, justice, truth, and peace, but baseless hatred topples all 3. The political discourse in the country is baseless hatred. I want nothing to do with it. The brutal death of George Floyd, that's baseless hatred. Bigotry, prejudice, and racism are baseless hatred. Jealousy and envy are baseless hatred. Violence, looting, burning, shooting at police officers, hijacking protests to turn them into riots, that's also baseless hatred. The antidote to baseless hatred is love. The apostles say, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. To love your neighbor as yourself, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, to look on your fellow human being with genuine empathy. It's almost impossible to do any of that in this climate because my fellow human being has a misinformed, brainwashed head full of ideas, fake news-based social ideologies and political agendas that are the exact opposite of mine, right? How can you love those misinformed sheeple who refuse to wake up and smell the conspiracy? How are you supposed to love such a person? This is the real test. Will the sons and daughters of the kingdom show our allegiance to the kingdom, or will we allow our allegiance to the foolish, transient, and swiftly vanishing things of this world to tear us apart and turn us on one another? Our master warns us that in the last days, the love of most will grow cold. Our master said that this is one of the signs of the times, that the love of most will grow cold. More portentous than the angel that dropped its trumpet, more ominous than the steeple struck by lightning, more significant than the American flag torn asunder by the storm. This is the sign our master warned us of. The love of most will grow cold. 40 years before the temple was consumed in flames of baseless hatred, Simon Peter stood up in the temple courts on the holy day of Shavuot and recited the prophecy from Joel saying, I will pour out my spirit, and I will show wonders in the heavens and on earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness, the moon to blood, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. The Shavuot prophecy points to the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. The video of George Floyd's death under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer and the staggering apocalyptic vision of American cities in flames should make us hunger and thirst for the righteousness of the kingdom and the justice of the government of King Messiah. He shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples, Isaiah 2:4. He comes to execute justice with righteousness. As it says, with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. Isaiah 11:4. Too long I have had my dwelling among those who hate peace. I am peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Currently, we are in a low place, but what goes down must go up. Every ascent begins from a low place. Every low place is an opportunity to ascend. In closing, I am going to read a few pages from the Avram Polyak book, Hitler, Warlord and Spiritualist. Avram Polyak is one of the founding fathers of modern Messianic Judaism, who was active during the last world war. And this is a long passage, but I want you to indulge me and listen to his wisdom and his insight and allow Polyak to speak into our current situation. He writes, "A true flood surrounds us. It drowns people in blood and tears. So who is to blame for this war? That one whose name is upon all of our lips? Is it just he alone? Are we not also guilty? We all have nationalism. We all have done our part to carry on the war. Even if we do not want to go to war against this or that country, we have participated in the war effort of everyone against everyone else. You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be liable to the judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment." Matthew 5:21-22. Yeshua said this in the Sermon on the Mount. War does not begin with killing. It begins with anger. Anger is the first stop. Death is the last on this train, once you go down the path of hatred. Every thought is a force. Every feeling is power. We live in a thought stream of humanity, and we strengthen that stream by the influx of our thoughts, both the good and the bad. Just as the currents of a stream overflow their banks from time to time and flood the surrounding countryside, so in 1939 the thought stream of hatred overflowed its banks and flooded the world. It does not matter who was the first to take up arms. The question of who began the war is pointless, immaterial, and insignificant. We began the war. It did not start in 1939. It started decades before that. It did not start on this or that frontier, but it started in our hearts, in our families, in our communities, in our cities. We went to war against our neighbors. We fired poisoned arrows, invisible in the spiritual realm, but ultimately visible in the material world, as a massive return strike fell back upon us in the form of bombs, missiles, and torpedoes. Our lack of brotherly, neighborly love accumulated through days and weeks and years. The elements of hatred, envy, and resentment were already in us and all around us. Finally, the dam of peace had to be breached. The elemental power of war stands against us, and we are powerless against it. The nations are strapped down, caught up in a war machine. Only when the war machine has run its course and powered down, when force has crashed against force, and all the energy is spent, will the nations regain their freedom again. We have been able to do nothing to end this war until now. But that which has been put into our hand, what we are already doing today and what we must continue to do, is this. We need to prepare for peace. Every thought is a force, and every feeling is power. Let us use the thought stream of peace to flow into the thought sea of war. Let's turn around, brothers, and let us search for the path of peace. Let us lay down our weapons. Let us disarm in our souls. Let us begin a new life, and let us build a new world. So just as we have added log to log to make a funeral pyre for humanity, so now let us gather together stone upon stone for the building up of the temple of Messiah in our midst. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Take on my yoke and learn from me, and find rest for your soul.